The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz hosts a radio show in Seattle, and he has, as always, the details for us exclusively.
Jason Rantz, our Seattle guy, is with us now.
Jason Rantz, always great to have you in focus. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, I think you're all right, and thanks for being on the show.
An update on what's happening in your Pacific Northwest.
House Republican leaders lay out their plan as a commitment to America. This is how they're going to win the midterms. Will it actually work? We'll find out. We'll talk with former King County Councilmember Kathy Lambert, who blasts the county for going easy on criminals. Plus, we'll take you through a homeless program that actually works. It's happening right here in Washington State. We're going to get to that and so much more. This hour of the Jason Rantz Show brought to you by StreetTalkFinancial.com. So let's get into it.
The monologue.
We spend a lot of time focused on the southern border. It's easy to forget, oh, hey, we've got a northern border. Blaine is dealing with a crackdown on drug smuggling. There's a lot of drug smuggling coming across the northern border. Their sector agent, his name is the one who's in charge, at least, is Blaine Bennett. I think they picked him there because of the first name. He said they are seizing a lot of drugs at the border. He spoke with our sister station, Cairo News Radio.
You know, ultimately ended up being methamphetamines and weighing 445 pounds. So it was a pretty good bust.
They made that bust worth $1.7 million. That's a lot of meth. They also found ketamine as well. This is a problem that's been going on for a while, but we're seeing an increase mostly because drug dealers realize the opportunities. Not necessarily a lack of security at our northern border that hasn't really been changed in any significant way, at least, but opportunity to sell product here in Washington State and across the country.
In the Blaine sector, our area, it's predominantly human smuggling. We do have the drug smuggling that takes place.
So they deal with human smuggling, and now the opportunity is drugs.
But it is something that's going to be a constant battle for all law enforcement, you know, not just the Border Patrol.
So what exactly is being done here? Now, obviously, because they know it's coming, they're a little bit more alert. But at the same time, they're utilizing technology such as drones to go ahead and try to track anyone who's coming across the border where there isn't a whole – it's not like we have a huge fence or wall between us and Canada. It's in some cases, it literally is a little tiny fence.
You know, we're all trying to get an advantage. Just like the bad guys are all trying to get an advantage over us, we're all just trying to get an advantage over them.
So they're using tech.
Small unmanned aerial systems, right, that can get out there and help us do surveillance, different platforms that are mobile.
So it's always curious when we get these kinds of stories because part of us, we obviously all know that there's a border at the northern part of the state, but we just don't think of it. We never think of it, right? I mean, when we're talking, especially in the conversations having to do with politics, we think about the southern border because that is where a huge crisis very clearly is, and that's where it tends to be. But you can't afford to do that if you are any of the agents working for CPB over in Blaine or anywhere in northern United States, right? I mean, you just can't ignore that. But we do. And so kudos to the men and women who are working their tails off and keeping this country safe in an area that just doesn't get a whole lot of scrutiny from the public.
It's a national security issue at that point as well. So that's really our focus.
So good for Blaine Bennett of Blaine, which I know sounds like I misspoke, but it's his name. What do you want? And he's put at Blaine. Again, maybe did he get the job for the name? Someone's all like, we need more alliteration. Get me someone with two B's for their name. Blaine. His name is Blaine. We hit gold. That's a gold mine right there. But anyway, seriously, kudos to the folks over at our northern border for Customs and Border Patrol. They're working their tails off. They're not getting a whole lot of praise, and they're not getting a whole lot of attention. But the work that they do is incredibly important. Now this.
The interview.
King County Republicans to the rescue. Unfortunately, they're put in a position where they're pretty much the only ones who are standing up for residents in Seattle's International District. The King County executive, Dow Constantine, decided to move forward with his plans to expand a shelter in a neighborhood that is already overwhelmed with homeless services. It's not what the community wants, and no one really bothered to ask what the community wanted. Joining me on the line is the King County Republican Party Chairman, Matthew Patrick Thomas, king of selfies. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So you guys got involved. Why?
Well, it was kind of a fluke, but one of our board members said, hey, this is interesting what's going on with down this Chinatown International District. So they had a protest a couple of weeks ago at Seattle's Hinghe Park down in that neighborhood. And they're talking about Dow Constantine putting this basically close to 500 beds plus 50 tiny homes plus 50 RV parking spots right down just next door to the Chinatown International District. But the main thing is that they did not consult the community at all, zero. And the Seattle council members, too, they were like, well, that's a county project. I said, you can't even build a fence in this town, let alone a massive complex like that in Seattle without everyone knowing about it. So we got involved. I noticed that none of the news stations were picking up this story or the papers, or the local papers. So we're at a protest. I noticed a lot of the leaders were translating into Cantonese. And so after the protest, I said to one of the leaders, I go, listen, they're ignoring you maybe because of this language barrier. They can ignore you guys, but if we get involved, we'll stand up for you. Not one Democrat showed up down there to defend them. And we got in there, and we brought the state party chairman, myself, and our national party representatives in there to say, hey, we stand with you. This community needs to be heard.
How do you plan on helping them be heard? Because in fairness, they are being heard, right? I mean, people are now paying attention. The media is paying attention. But when you're saying be heard, you really mean be listened to, because the county is just ignoring them.
Yeah, well, I'd say as far as the media, they didn't show up until we showed up down there. There was only one reporter basically covered it, Jonathan Cho, yep. With Discovery, and he was reporting on it. But then once we came down there for a second protest this last Tuesday at the Seattle City Hall, and we sent press releases or advisories out from the state party as well as county party, the press finally showed up. So I'd say that we were a large part of that to help get their message out and get the media to cover the story.
And the thing is, this isn't inherently political, right? I mean, it shouldn't be seen political. I don't think you guys see it as political either.
Negative. We just see it as wrong. This is Dow Constantine's MO. He's done this before. He just basically rams things through. But the Seattle City Council is not. They're kind of complicit in this as well. I mean, on Tuesday afternoon, you have Seattle Chief Adrian Diaz getting sworn in. So Deb Juarez, the council president, was upstairs, and this protest showed up, and the members of that community showed up. But she wouldn't even show up to the council meeting. She called in via Zoom. Only two of the council members showed up, even though this is a huge community down there, and they're just jamming us through, and they didn't even have the courage to stand and listen to the people of that community in person.
So long-term, what do you expect will happen here?
Well, if it goes through, I pray for the people of that community down there. It'd be cool if everyone goes down that neighborhood and see how bad it is right now. It's already a war zone down there with homelessness, needles, open-air drug markets. The Seattle police and county police have basically said so much that they can't really there's no safety plan for this thing put in place. And so the crimes, it's going to get worse. It's going to be a zombie apocalypse down there, and there's no plan to fix that. So if this goes through, and I do think Dow's going to punch this thing through, he's using emergency orders, and they go, we have to have this done in this year. It's like, really? Yep, you can't consult with the community. This is that big of an emergency. You have to punch this social experiment, which is what it's going to be, experiment into one community, and it's not right. It's just not right. It's not right at all.
It's not right, and it's dangerous. Like, ultimately, it's dangerous, and this is a neighborhood that has already seen its fair share of crime. It is absolutely absurd what they're doing here. And let's talk just briefly about the political aspect of this, because it is political in this sense. We have seen a pretty significant chunk of both Asian Americans and Latino Americans moving towards the Republicans. And I think an issue like this is why. Because we actually listen to communities and we say this doesn't make any sense, instead of just taking groups for granted. Because we hear over and over and over again by folks on the left that they care deeply about the quote-unquote BIPOC community, marginalized communities. But they don't look at Asians as anything other than white people, because they look at results in data of students doing well in school. And so they're not going to treat them any different than they mistreat white people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they say one thing, that the four communities of color, but their policies are the exact opposite. And that district already has the highest homicide rate in the city. And actually, the city of Seattle just had its record homicide month last month. It was 46 homicides. So things are getting worse. Yep. And the mayor, 47. And Dow Constantine, 47. Yeah. So things are getting worse, and there's no real plan to go forward. So, and I would say the argument too is that you can't have defund the police, you can't have hamstring the police pursuit laws, you can't have basically legalized doing drugs in the city, you can't have retail thefts allowed, and then also go put 1,000 people in the one neighborhood. I mean, talk about a disaster. And what, there's a 1-2 punch down there. They want to expand the Sound Transit facility down there as well. Yep. So this is really, they're just throwing, and one final point, there's already 5 homeless projects down in there right now, mm-hmm. as it is. So they're just dumping everybody down in to the China International District. And it's not right. It's just not right. And they can't, the burden is too much to bear. So it's really sad to go down there and see what's going on.
They have given up on this district. We haven't. Join the King County Republican Party at kcgop.org. kcgop.org. Great organization that's really active on the ground in King County, like many of the Western Washington Republican groups. kcgop.org. Matthew Patrick Thomas, chairman. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now this.
The Monologue.
Remember that degenerate teen who ran over that mom and her, what was it, an 8-month-old in a stroller? It happened in Los Angeles. It happened in an alleyway. The kid was in a stolen car. And looking at, and thankfully, by the way, they're okay. They're obviously still emotionally traumatized by what happened, but physically, somehow, miraculously, they were both okay. But looking at the surveillance video makes it very clear that this teenager was targeting her. This was intentional. That kid, that teenager, because he's a minor, because he is in Los Angeles, where criminal justice reform is a promise made by people like George Gascon and others, that kid suffered no meaningful punishment whatsoever. We can hashtag that restorative justice. He was sentenced to summer camp for 5 to 7 months. However, his lawyer wants him out early, and the judge is actually considering it. Rather than laughing this lawyer and the kid out of court, the judge is actually considering it. This teenager, who while at probation camp, has reportedly been involved in at least 14 fights. He's had write-ups for misconduct, disobedience, defiance of authority. This all according to Fox Digital. And they spoke to Shea Sanna, who's the deputy district attorney. She actually argued against the early release. And she told Fox News Digital, the reports from his time in probation show that he is not rehabilitated and he shouldn't be released early. Yeah, no kidding. They report the defense introduced a motion for early release yesterday. However, Sanna raised issues with many of its claims, and the judge ultimately chose to continue the proceedings to September 28th when the people who wrote the probation report will be asked to testify under oath. Do you think that they're lying? The victim in all of this, Rachel is her name. The woman, the mother who was run over, she wasn't even given an opportunity to speak, at least not yesterday. Now, whatever happens at the end of this is a story. Whatever happens, in this particular case, it's a story. It's a story if he's released early, but it's a story about why it happens to begin with this kind of move. And it's happening everywhere. Restorative justice, alternative sentencing, diversion programs, whatever it is you want to call it, is happening everywhere. We have Democrats in control, and they're doing this from L.A. to Seattle, Minneapolis to Chicago, New York, everywhere. They believe in endless chances for criminals. They don't believe in punishing criminals. Why? Because we live in a world that is white supremacist. We have institutional racism. That's the reason why this kid ended up running over this woman and her kid. You see, he happens to be a member of the BIPOC community. We hear that all the time. That's a Latinx person. That's an indigenous person. They are victims of an unjust society steeped in white supremacy, and we have to help them. The criminal justice system is against them. And by putting them in jail, all you're doing is making their life more difficult. When it comes to teenagers, especially, they embrace this position. I don't have an appetite for putting teenagers in jail, and I'm willing to bet most of you don't either. However, there are some circumstances in which you absolutely have to put them in jail and have to put them in jail for a very long time. At some point, I don't care about their sob story. I don't care about the kid's upbringing. I don't care about the reasons behind their decision to do something so reckless and dangerous and deadly. I care more at that point about the risk to the public. I care more about everybody else in the community and their safety. We'll help those kids when they're in jail. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Now this.
The interview.
Things not really going so well as far as quote-unquote criminal justice reforms, not in King County and not when you have ideologues on the King County Council in charge. Unfortunately, with only 1.5 Republicans on the council, things are headed in the wrong direction. Who could have predicted this? Joining me on the line is former King County Council member Kathy Lambert. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
Take me through something that they decided to do as it relates to restitution. So a victim of a crime is given some sort of restitution as a result, and the criminal, for the most part, it kind of seems like doesn't get punished. What's the process right now?
Well, you're exactly right. And it's part of the things that I predicted when they started talking about not having any bail money. And the restitution issue is that originally you had just the person paying the restitution. And what they decided was to open a restitution account. And the restitution account would make the victim whole as quickly as possible. And so that was great. So that if you were a victim and you had your cell phone stolen or something like that, you could get the money to be made whole again and go on with your life. But the implication at that point was that then that would be given to the perpetrator and the perpetrator would pay the fund back so that it would be a revolving fund. But that's not how it's working. They're not getting the perpetrator to pay it back. So the taxpayer gets to pay it again. So it just shows how things are being perverted mm-hmm. with the direction that the new chair of the Law and Justice Committee, along with Dow, are taking the county's criminal justice system. And it's very sad.
Yeah. And let's not give a pass to the King County prosecutor and Dan Satterberg, because he was a big believer in this general concept.
Yes. I don't think he anticipated it to go this far. As in many things, the new poll in the last year has really made things go so far to the left. And that's what we saw. And it's so sad. When you look at the number of shootings this year alone, there's been more shootings in the last year than any of the last 4 years put together. And, you know, when Larry Gossett was on the council, he and I worked very closely on law and justice together. And we reduced the number of youth in the juvenile detention center from 198 down to somewhere between 16 and 20, depending upon the days. And now today, there are 37 people. And so even though they're reducing the amount of crimes that people are being detained for, reducing what they're being charged for, they still have more people being incarcerated because the programs just aren't working.
So this week, we also got a budget from King County Executive Dow Constantine, a budget for a public safety plan that creates a gun violence unit. It's supposed to expand Metro Transit security officers. You get some new program where you're sending out, social workers or behavioral health professionals alongside some deputies, depending on the call. You're also calling this out as misleading.
Very misleading. First of all, those Metro officers are non-police officers.
Exactly.
So they have no power. So they can come up and be nice and say, you should have done this, you should have done that. Stop.
The Jason Rant Show.
Jason Rant has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke this story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion, Jason. Definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
We spend a lot of time talking about the homelessness crisis on the show. In fact, we just talked earlier on this hour with Matthew Patrick Thomas from the King County GOP. We tell you what isn't working, and oftentimes we tell you what can work. Well, good news. We know programs that can work. We know how they can work. There's one that's happening right now. It's happening in Bellevue, but it is growing. They are so successful over at Providence Heights, they are now moving to the city of Arlington. This is a program that has seen significant results, and I thought we would check in with its CEO to get a little bit better idea as to why it's been so successful. Joining me on the line is Providence Heights CEO Christine Soule. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hi, thanks for having me, Jason.
So if you could, because we don't want to just call Providence Heights a shelter. It's so much more than that. Take us through what the program actually is.
Yeah, you know, really, our heart and our focus is prevention. And my big thing, because I was trafficked, I was a meth addict, I was abused. And, you know, I was talking to a major donor as we were creating this organization, and he said, I thought you focused more on trafficked victims. And I said, well, I kind of do. He goes, I'm confused. And I said, if I would have had someone that said, would you prefer to be helped prior to being trafficked? What would you choose? And I would have cried out, please help me now. Mm-hmm. And the way that the system works, you know, if you look at the medical system, could you imagine going into the doctor saying you have this ailment and they're like, yeah, you know, that's great. But I'm sorry, look at all of the dying people. We only help dying people. And same with the education system. A C student that says to a teacher they're struggling, could you imagine them saying, oh, I'm sorry, we only help D's and F students. Consider yourself lucky. And we tend to do that with the social system, though. And the struggle with that is when someone is already experiencing homelessness, addiction, trafficking, abuse, it's really hard. When I was in that state, I didn't want help. I didn't know how to get help. And who knows if you're even capable of helping them. So really my heart is to help people never fall off the cliff. When women come in and they're saying, man, I am just trying to figure out how to survive. I don't know how I'm going to pay my rent next month. Or just maybe the rug has been pulled out from under their feet. You know, a divorced woman who has no credit established and, you know, no job skill set that's really going to provide for her children. You know, that's the type of person that we bring into Providence Heights, and we help them discover, you know, what were you created to do? What do you burn for? What are you passionate about? And we just strategically, through assessments and conversations with them, help them to find a career path that is something that is sustainable. You know, McDonald's doesn't cut it to really live on it.
Exactly. That's a starter job. And you need, at this point, yes. Many of the women in this case have had starter jobs. They need a little bit more intense work than that. It is a program that can go up to 2 years, I believe, right? It's a 1 year, maybe 2 year program, depending on the situation.
Yeah, you got it. So, you know, we have different quarters. There's four quarters in the first year, and it's titled Learn, Lead, Land, and Launch. So in the first 6 months, they're 3 months, they're just learning. They're gathering as much information as they can. We started two businesses, a coffee business and a honey business, for the sole purpose of teaching them. They learn how to build a website. They learn how to do all of the e-commerce, package fulfillment, ship station. And so they're gaining these skills, QuickBooks skills and computer skills, secretarial skills, so that they can then, you know, turn that into whatever it is that they choose. So that first quarter is the learn phase. Then they become the leader. And so we always teach them when they come in, you're going to be teaching a class one day. You're going to be speaking. You're going to be presenting. And so everything that they're learning, they have to be able to teach the next group that comes in. Then the land phase is the third quarter. And in that phase, they are starting to kind of go, okay, this is my career path I'm choosing. Is it further education? Is it, I like my job, but I need, you know, maybe higher management, or maybe I want to start a business. And so that's the land phase. They start really focusing on what is it going to look like when they leave. The last quarter, they are solely focused on what is their career path, saving their money, getting everything in order, finding an apartment. That's that final stage. And then if they need another year to solely focus on career path, maybe it's a education, or maybe they are starting a business where they just need a little more time, then that second year is really just focused on, they can love the other ladies coming in and help be a leader, but really they're focused on what are they going to do when they leave, and how do they leave so that they can just thrive in life and not survive.
What's your success rate?
Oh my goodness. You know, we've had an incredible success rate. We are limited on our space right now. We're in Bellevue. And we have a cap of 14 women. And so, and this is our first about year and a half in our organization. So we haven't had a ton of people graduating, but I'll give you an example. One woman, 65 years old, I'm thinking, how do we find a career path for her? Well, she was a truck driver. that was became difficult as she got older. So she became a assisted care giver, and she lived in their home. Well, as she got older and she needed care herself, she lost her job and her home in the same day. So what we did through assessments and her passion, she loved them both. She is now a bus driver for a medical hospital, and she takes elderly people to and from their appointments.
Wow.
She's got full benefits. She's got an apartment. She's living the dream. We have four women who've started their own business. We've had, two others, one who's writing a book, one who's illustrating. So we've had an incredible success rate. The only people, and there's two that we've felt like, man, I wish we could have done more for them, is when we've brought people in who were not ready to change the trajectory of their life. And we knew it, but we love them. We adored them. I am so in love with them. But we knew that they couldn't think past survival. And now we really have dialed in to who we really can properly serve. And it's heartbreaking sometimes because you want to take everyone. But we also know if they're not prepared, we're hurting them more than we're helping them.
Yeah.
So we get them somewhere else. And then we would consider ourselves as a step two to those people.
Yeah,
it's
look,
never a no to not yet.
Yeah, what you just said, though, is clearly a huge success. You're not going to have 100% success rate, unfortunately, but yeah. You always strive to get to that
it's
point.
Huge success.
Yeah, and you never give up. And that's why I really support and appreciate all the work that you're doing. Where are you moving just very quickly? Because you're going from Bellevue to where?
Yeah, we're going to Arlington, Washington. And we're in the Smoky Point area, and we are acquiring a 120,000 square foot building.
Wow.
Wrap your head around that.
Yeah, that is insane.
You know, I have a vision for a residential tower and an office tower with retail space. So we can employ the women. We can help in, you know, just their career path incubation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, another huge barrier is childcare. And so we'll have a daycare that's offered. Our ladies can have their kids right there at the daycare. And then we'll also have a church, a school, and then retail space. So by 2025, we're projecting that we'll be making about $2.5 million through all of our retail space and, you know, commissary kitchen, that kind of thing, that will just get poured into 100% given back into the organization. And our vision is to go nationwide.
I love it. We fully support you. We hope everyone who's listening understands this is not a cheap endeavor. They need some help, some donations, and volunteers. You can learn more at providenceheights.org, providenceheights.org. Learn more about this really great organization, friend of the show, Kathy Lambert, former council member for King County, is on the board here. This is how I'm aware of what Providence Heights has been up to. So good luck. Know that we're behind you, and we look forward to catching up in the coming months as you make this move into Arlington, Christine. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason. I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Again, providenceheights.org. Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz, Seattle radio host, joins us now.
Jason, you're the perfect guest on this.
Jason Rantz, welcome back, Jason.
I see you often on other programs here.
Jason, what's going on?
Jason, thanks for coming on.
The Quick Hit.
I think it is fair to say that on the topic of abortion, Democrats were moved to get out the vote. They really were. When it came to overturning Roe v. Wade with the Dobbs decision, the right decision, they were motivated in a way that I think caught Republicans off guard. Now, we've learned the lesson there. And we're heading into the general elections for the midterms feeling a lot more confident. I think there's a lot of reason to be confident. There was this piece, I think it was the New York Times 2-3 weeks ago, by Nate Cohn, basically saying he's seeing some of the same issues with the polls when they were wrong in the Hillary Clinton v. Donald Trump presidential race. They didn't actually get fixed. The reason why they were wrong then is the same reason why they're wrong now. They're not necessarily reaching out to the right kinds of people who we expect to vote in large numbers, who we're starting to see come out in large numbers even during the primaries. They didn't quite go the way that all Republicans wanted them to go. One thing that we have on the side of these Republican elections, regardless of where you live, is immigration. It turns out that is, in fact, a winning issue. And when you look at the polls, it bears that out. The problem with this as a winning issue is that for the longest time, it wasn't getting covered. We knew that there was a crisis at the border. We heard border governors, border mayors screaming about this issue on both sides of the aisle, not just Republicans. We talk a lot about, I've seen a lot of conversations on Fox News, for example, with the mayor of El Paso, who is a Democrat, who, by the way, is busing migrants to other parts of the country. This is not new. But this issue was being ignored despite the Republican pleas, because I think the media knew that this is an issue that can help Republicans politically. They ignored the streams of people coming across the border. And any time that there would be even a little bit of coverage of the issue at the border, it would be framed through an uncritical lens from the Biden administration saying, oh, there's no issue whatsoever. And so as we talked about in the last hour, Greg Abbott, Ron DeSantis, they changed that. They forced, through a political stunt, and yes, it was a political stunt, they forced media coverage. They forced it. And granted, the media is, while covering it, still trying to twist this a little bit and saying, these are Republicans who are using human beings as political pawns. How dare you? Only the left gets to do that. You had migrants shipped to Martha's Vineyard. Oh, no, those residents were very, very upset. That very, very white group of wealthy progressives said, if you're not here to mow my lawn, if you're not here to make my food, or pick up my kids from school, sorry, we're going to have to deport you. And boy, do we hope no one calls us out as hypocrites. And they didn't necessarily get called out as hypocrites in the media, but the people who were watching all the coverage, they knew. We know what's going on, and now it's impossible to ignore the crisis. And so now you're starting to see the shift from the Biden White House to try to make this about Republicans making it worse. We already heard, and no one really believed this, that under Trump, it was a mess. We're trying to fix what Trump broke. So odd, because under Trump, we weren't getting as many people crossing into this country illegally. Weird how that works. So that boring, untalented guy whose name I always forget from MSNBC, he spoke today with Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. And the guy whose name I always forget because he's so boring and untalented, he was in El Paso.
Secretary, I'm here in El Paso, where about 2,000 people are arriving every day. This fiscal year, we're looking at roughly 2.4 million apprehensions. Countless others are crossing and not being apprehended. Mm-hmm. Secretary, what is the United States border policy?
Just real quick, let me answer that before Alejandro. That is the policy. That actually is the policy. It's to allow people to come into this country illegally. I mean, we're going to pretend that it's not. I mean, but between you and me, guy whose name I can't remember, let's just be honest. It's just between you, because no one watches MSNBC anyway. Just between you and I, that is the policy.
Well, we are doing so much, Jose. You know what our policy is? Our policy is to enforce the law. And that is indeed what we are doing. Individuals who arrive at our border who do not have a legal basis to remain in the United States are being removed.
Are they really being removed, though? I mean, it seems like they're not being removed. It seems like we are putting them into other parts of the country for which they are staying. We're connecting them with family and friends, and they're staying here. Huh? They're being moved? What? Really?
And those that do have a valid basis under the laws that Congress has passed are able to stay as the law provides. Oh, that is our policy, to enforce immigration law. At the same time, we continue to urge Congress to pass immigration reform, because one thing that everyone agrees upon in an area where there's very little agreement, the area of immigration, is that our system is broken, and it is in dire and desperate need of reform.
You're breaking it, dude. And by the way, who's got total control in D.C. right now? And who had it under the Obama administration for his first 2 years? You guys did. You had all the opportunities in the world. You have the opportunity right now. What are you doing to fix our broken immigration system? We are told over and over and over again it's broken, and I certainly believe that. We don't have a very good or efficient, let's just say, immigration system. What are you doing about it? I'm serious. What exactly, Alejandro Mayorkas, are you and this administration doing about it? We have a border czar who's never actually been to the border as vice president. We've got a border czar. What are the plans exactly? Oh, you're going to blame Republicans.
Work with us.
Oh, okay.
Coordinate. We work in close partnership with local communities to bring order, to bring safety, and bring humanity to the situation. I know you're in El Paso. We work very closely with Oscar Leeser, the mayor of El Paso.
Yeah.
We reimburse the city for expenses through our emergency food and shelter program. When we work in coordination with one another, we address the situation ably and effectively.
Just real quick, again, sorry to interrupt, Alejandro. There were hundreds and hundreds of migrants sleeping on the streets of El Paso. That's a success? We're supposed to look at that, and Greg Abbott is supposed to say, oh, yes, let us coordinate with you. Again, DeSantis, Abbott, we are seeing how the hypocrisy is just being made as their strategy, their communication strategy. We know that Republicans have been calling out to the Biden administration on this very issue, calling it a crisis. You all said it wasn't a crisis multiple times. Biden himself said it's not a crisis. They weren't going to be photographed or videoed by the border because they knew it was a crisis, but they told us it wasn't a crisis. So at that point, you were willing to work with Republicans? Why didn't you? Because they were calling it out.
When a governor acts unilaterally and refuses to coordinate with other government officials, that is when problems arise.
Oh, okay. Got it. The problems only started to arise recently. It was because of the busing. Got it. Before the whole Martha's Vineyard thing in Chicago and D.C. and New York, before all of that, it wasn't actually a problem. Got it. People definitely believe you. Oh, the polls suggest otherwise. We have so many issues right now on the side of Republicans. We do. Kevin McCarthy is out today with a new plan. It's a plan called the Commitment to America. And he was on Fox and Friends this morning at a diner in Pennsylvania. I don't know why they do these things at diners. But he was out there and he was making the pitch because a lot of the issues that we're complaining about, that we're calling attention to, and it's not just immigration, obviously. The Republicans have solutions. Democrats are the problem.
Well, it's about putting out to the American public. I mean, think about this. We're in Washington, not Washington, D.C. We're in Washington County, Pennsylvania. Why? Because this plan is about all these people.
Well, and also it's a swing state.
Sitting around a table talking about the challenges that they have. Can they afford it? Can they fill up their tank of gas? How do they survive with now the Democrats causing inflation? They lost a whole month's salary. Are their communities safe again? You want a community that's protected, where law enforcement is respected, where criminals are prosecuted. You want an education system that's built on the future where kids come first and are taught to dream big. So what we wanted to do, a plan for a new direction. We want to be upfront with the American public. We want an election to have a contrast. If they put their trust in us, this is exactly what we'll do. Hold our feet to the fire. And on the very first day, we're going to repeal 87,000 IRS agents.
Yay.
So they're not going after you. We work for you.
They work for us. And it's about time that they acted that way.
The Last Rants.
Look, people don't say thank you enough. I don't think we are in an environment in which people are even thinking about saying thank you. I know some of you are clear exceptions, but I'm willing to bet a lot of us who are listening right now are not. And so I am chief among them. I don't say thank you all that often. So let me say thank you to Dan Bongino, who allowed me to host his syndicated show earlier this morning. It was on from 9 to noon. Some of you I know tuned in because I saw some of your tweets, and you know, getting to fill in on a syndicated radio show is a significant deal. It's the equivalent of going on Fox News. It's actually probably more ears are going to be on a syndicated show like Dan's than eyes on any cable network. So kind of a big deal. I really do appreciate it, Dan Bongino. I will say this. I have never been more tired. So, you know, I did work my tail off for you. No, I'm kidding. So you should thank me. I'm kidding. Stop it. Thank you, Dan Bongino. I'm Jason Rantz. I'll see you on Monday.